You know that that visceral panic when you're driving on the highway, both hands firmly on the wheel, and you just suddenly hit a patch of black ice?
Oh yeah, when the steering wheel just completely disconnects from reality.
Exactly. In that fraction of a second, you realize you aren't actually driving the car anymore, right? Physics is just taking over.
You're just along for the ride at that
Right,
point,
just a passive passenger in a 2-ton metal box, hoping for the best. And, well, that is the exact same illusion of control we operate under every single day with our digital tools. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
glad to be here.
Today, we are pulling directly from the March 27th, 2026 edition of the Atomic News Tech and AI Daily Newsletter. This is a highly curated digest covering everything from AI agent infrastructure all the way to like human factors design.
And honestly, in an era of such rapid AI advancement and these incredibly complex systems, understanding who actually holds the keys to the technology you use is, well, it's more critical than ever.
Yeah, and that's exactly our mission for you today. Rather than just reading off a list of headlines, we're going to explore the hidden thread that connects all these seemingly random updates.
The tug of war.
Exactly, the ongoing tug of war for control in our digital lives. Whether it's wrestling control of hardware from massive corporations, losing control of our software dependencies, or just fighting for control over our personal privacy, let's actually start by ripping the lid right off some closed hardware.
There's really nothing like a physical hardware hack to illustrate that desire for control.
So the newsletter highlights this absolutely fascinating piece of hacker ingenuity. A hacker named David managed to run a Tesla Model 3's autopilot computer literally right on his desk.
Wow.
Yeah, and he used parts scavenged from crashed cars to do it.
The sheer persistence required for a project of that magnitude is just staggering. I mean, he's dealing directly with Tesla's Hardware 3, the HW3 architecture, which houses their proprietary neural net acceleration chips. So this is not, a standard off-the-shelf motherboard where you can just plug in a USB drive and boot up Linux.
Definitely not. In fact, the source describes his documentation as pure hacker joy meets actual engineering insight.
It's a great way to put it.
Because David had to completely reverse engineer the HW3 computer. He managed to bypass secure boot, gained root access, booted Linux, and then actually ran his own custom code on it.
Bypassing secure boot is no joke. That means he had to fundamentally trick the hardware's foundational sequence of trust.
Yeah, he had to break the cryptographic chain before the operating system even knew what was happening. It's kind of like buying this high-tech, impenetrable safe, not to see what's inside, but just to figure out how the lock was manufactured,
Right.
and then, I don't know, reprogramming the keypad to play your favorite song instead of opening.
That is a perfect analogy, and it really brings us to why this matters in the broader context of our theme. It raises a huge question about hardware ownership for all of you listening.
Like, who actually owns it?
Exactly. When you buy a smart car, do you actually own the computer inside it?
You'd think so, right? You paid for it.
Legally, sure. But from an engineering standpoint, companies design these devices to be black boxes. Secure boot, lockdown bootloaders, those are mechanisms of control.
Designed to keep the end user out.
Exactly. And this story highlights the clash between that lockdown proprietary corporate engineering and the foundational hacker ethos.
The idea that you have the right to understand and control the devices you own.
Yes. Hacking physical hardware is a proactive way to take that control back. But, while a hacker might spend months taking control of a physical chip, developers can accidentally lose control of their software in seconds.
Oh man, the transition from seizing hardware to losing software control is jarring because software supply chains are, well, they're entirely invisible until they break.
Totally invisible.
Which brings us to the LUTLM supply chain attack. The source links to this chilling minute-by-minute transcript of the LUTLM team responding to the attack in real time.
That transcript is intense.
It really is. The attack hit the PyPI packages specifically on versions 1.82.7 and 1.82.8, and the newsletter calls this required reading if you're running agent infrastructure.
I would absolutely agree with that.
Because it just showcases the pure chaos and the intense coordination needed when an open source dependency gets compromised. But I have to push back here for a
Well,
second.
that's the disconnect.
Well, if we are building these hyper-advanced AI agent infrastructures that are, supposed to revolutionize the world, why are we still so incredibly vulnerable to a single compromised puzzle piece in the open source ecosystem?
That is the million-dollar question. And it comes down to what a supply chain attack actually is.
Okay, lay it out for us.
Think about it like this. You can write perfectly secure code for your own app. But if you rely on a compromised open source dependency like LeetLM on PyPI, your entire system is suddenly vulnerable.
Because your system just automatically pulls that bad code in.
Exactly. It exposes this incredibly fragile web of trust that modern software infrastructure is built upon.
So even the smartest AI agents are basically built on a house of cards if the dependencies aren't secure.
Right. The developers are just accidentally losing control without even realizing it.
Which is terrifying. But, you know, while developers are battling malicious actors for control of software security, everyday citizens and governments are currently fighting a massive battle over personal privacy.
Oh, this is a huge pivot.
Yeah, it's a major legislative update. The European Parliament officially voted down the highly controversial chat control mass surveillance proposal.
This was a really heated debate.
It really was. And to look at both sides purely based on the source text, the proposal would have required platforms to scan all private messages to search for CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material.
Right. So the measure was entirely framed around the intent to protect children.
Exactly. That was the clear argument for it. But on the other side, privacy advocates fought fiercely against this. They argued that it was fundamentally a dangerous surveillance machine.
And the parliament voting it down is a rare, massive victory for those privacy advocates.
A huge one.
Because if chat control had passed, it would have fundamentally altered the definition of a private digital space.
Right, because someone is always looking over your shoulder, even if it's an algorithm.
Exactly. This vote represents a major line drawn in the sand regarding whether platforms and governments have the right to just look inside our digital lives.
It's all about protecting the borders of our personal communication. And you know what's interesting? This fierce desire to protect our private digital spaces perfectly mirrors a growing trend in how individuals are managing their personal knowledge.
Oh, the retreat from the public square.
Exactly. The source notes that personal encyclopedias are having a major moment right now. Instead of relying on centralized public sources like Wikipedia, people are building their own private knowledge bases.
Using tools like Obsidian or Rome?
Yeah, Obsidian, Rome, or even just plain text files. And it's driven by this urge to curate and organize information strictly within one's own worldview.
Which is fascinating.
It gets better. The newsletter seamlessly integrates their tool of the day here, which is the last 30 days skill.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah, it's an AI agent skill that researches any topic across Reddit, X, YouTube, Hacker News, Polymarket, the wider web, and it synthesizes a grounded summary just for you.
Just for your private database.
Right. I was thinking about it like this. Relying on Wikipedia is kind of like eating at a massive, crowded public buffet.
Oh, I like that.
You know, everyone has to compromise on the menu, right? But building a personal encyclopedia with Obsidian and tools like the last 30 days skill, that's like cultivating a private walled garden of knowledge tailored exactly to your unique tastes.
That's a great way to look at it. And if we analyze why this urge is so strong right now, it makes total sense.
Why do you think it's peaking now?
Well, in a world of algorithmic feeds and constant information overload, building a private knowledge base isn't just about taking notes. It's an active defense mechanism.
A defense against the noise.
Exactly. It's a way to reclaim your worldview and ensure you are actively curating your reality rather than just, you know, passively consuming whatever an algorithm feeds you.
Reclaiming control.
Yes. And that desire to meticulously curate our environments to suit our psychological needs is not new at all.
No.
No. If we look back at the history of engineering, we see this exact same impulse applied to literal physical environments. Though, of course, hackers always find a way to subvert those spaces for fun.
Which brings us perfectly to the rapid fire worth knowing updates from the newsletter. These updates highlight how we design, optimize, and occasionally just completely break our complex systems.
The physical and digital environments.
Right. So first up in system optimization, developers are taking back control of their infrastructure. The source highlights Turbolite.
Oh, Turbolite's super interesting.
Yeah, it's an experimental Squalite VFS, or virtual file system, serving sub-250 millisecond cold queries directly from S3 for database-per-tenant architectures.
Which basically means developers can pull data incredibly fast without relying on heavy, centralized cloud databases.
Exactly. And alongside that, we have the public alpha of OpenTelemetry profiles. This brings continuous profiling directly into the OTel ecosystem.
So much more visibility and control over how the software is running.
Right. Plus, there's a pragmatic guide explicitly written for quote-unquote lazy people on how to migrate open source forges from GitHub to Codeberg.
Again, moving away from centralized corporate control.
Notice a theme here. But then the source throws in two updates about human factors and hacker play that just, well, they kind of blew my mind.
Let's hear them.
First, there's this fascinating design psychology piece on why control rooms were painted seafoam green.
Classic human factors era stuff.
Yeah. But then, right next to it, someone actually implemented the video game Doom over DNS queries.
Naturally.
Wait, I have to stop here, because Doom over DNS. Why do hackers insist on figuring out how to play Doom on literally everything, including foundational networking protocols?
It is a tradition at this point.
But what does this actually say about the human brain? I mean, DNS is just for translating website names.
It's the perfect contrast, really. Think about those seafoam green control rooms. The seafoam green represents meticulous, top-down psychological design. It was meant to keep human operators calm, controlled, and totally focused in high-stress environments.
Right, trying to control the humans.
Exactly. But Doom over DNS represents the complete opposite. It's the bottom-up, chaotic, purely joyful human urge to subvert rigid systems just for play.
So even in the most restricted environments, we just want to play a 90s shooter.
Yes. It shows that no matter how strictly we design a system, human curiosity will always try to bend its rules. We demand control over our environments, but we rebel against being controlled by them.
That is profound. And it really brings us full circle on this journey.
It really does.
Think about what we've covered for you guys today. We went from hacking a Tesla neural net computer on a literal desk to the minute-by-minute panic of a PyPI supply chain attack.
From physical hardware to invisible software.
Right. We watched the EU Parliament defend the borders of private chats. We explored the rise of obsidian-powered personal encyclopedias. And we learned why control rooms were painted seafoam green right before someone inevitably tried to play Doom on the monitors.
It's all about who is pulling the lever.
Exactly. But before we go, I know you had a final provocative thought you wanted to leave the listener with regarding that personal encyclopedias trend.
I do. So if we are all using powerful AI agents to scour the web and build our own entirely private, customized knowledge bases to match our specific worldviews, what happens to our shared understanding of truth?
Oh, wow.
Right. Like, by finally gaining total control over our own information, are we actually reclaiming our minds, or are we just building ourselves incredibly comfortable seafoam green echo chambers?
That is a brilliant question. Are we just painting our own walls seafoam green to keep ourselves calm? That is definitely something to mull over on your own. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. Keep questioning who has control in your digital life, and as always, stay insanely curious.